Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop and trust your intuition. Through the wonderful array of guests we have on the show and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for the podcast. And today I am really excited, and I know I say that often, but we've got Jennifer Moore on today, and Jennifer Moore is all about empaths. Now, I had a quick chat with her before we came on. I didn't have time to stalk her website or anything yet, but we're going to do that later. But I had a quick chat with her, and what we're going to look at is empaths, intuition, and a bit about gaslighting, how narcissists or gaslighting is affecting us as an empath, and how it's affecting us with our intuition. So I'm really excited about this because, honestly, it just really hits home. I was experiencing that as in my earlier life. And I really think this is going to help. It's really going to be a good show to watch or listen to if you're on the show, on the podcast. So with all that, share, subscribe, like the show, because we need to get this sort of information out to others that are experiencing situations like gaslighting. We really need to get this out there. So welcome to the show, Jenny Moore. Well, we're going to call you Jen.
Yes, we're going to call me Jen. As I was telling you, the only people who call me Jenny are my nephews. Thank you so much for having me, Susan. I am just so excited to be having this conversation with you. This is absolutely a topic that is very dear to my heart. And I think, you know, we need to call out gaslighting in all of the different forms that it manifests in. So glad to be here.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can talk from experience with a relationship, but mine was a marriage, but it's still happening in the workplace and lots of other areas.
And I actually think that we live in a culture that is pervasively gaslighty about people with extrasensory perception, that we live in a culture where skepticism and scientific reality is perceived as having greater value than intuition, than sort of the more emotional soft skills that we have. And as I was saying to you before we got on, I've written this book, Empathic Mastery, a five-step system to go from emotional hot mess to thriving success. And you can see there's stickers on it for, it's won three. These are two stickers for book awards, but it's won three book awards. It's gotten all kinds of positive, really positive acclaim and great reviews and people loving it. And I happened to get reviewed by a book website thing. And the person who reviewed the book was clearly a bro dude who was wicked into mansplaining, but also who had no regard for any of the things that I was talking about, and just started review just starts with, well, if the fact that she worked as a psychic to begin with doesn't turn you off, and that she remembers past lives doesn't turn you off, then maybe you'll find something useful in this book. And at first, you know, of course, I felt hurt. I felt slighted. I felt like, you just don't understand what I'm talking about. But then I started to realize just like how much this experience has deeply influenced so many aspects of my life. And I believe has influenced so many aspects of many, many intuitive, psychic, and empathic people, because we do live in a culture that is so frequently saying, you're making this up, you're being too sensitive, you're overreacting, you're taking it too personally. What do you mean you think I'm sad? What do you mean you think I'm angry? What do you mean like you're sensing something is going on? That's all in your head. You're making this up. And
you go any further, sorry, because I'm loving where you're going.
Yeah.
I just need to clarify something, because you're talking about words that may not resonate with other people. Yes, you're with me here. To start with, we're talking about gaslighting. What the hell is gaslighting? No.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the other thing I would love to define is the word empath. So yes. So let's start with the word empath, just because that's what we're talking about. So empath, from my perspective, and the thing is, empath is not a clinical term, it is not a diagnostic term, and it originated in science fiction. But my understanding of what an empath is an empath is a being who is picking up the thoughts, the feelings, the energy, and the sensations from the people, the animals, maybe even the trees, the land, and the world around them. But unlike a psychic or an intuitive or somebody who understands that they're picking up information, but it's coming from outside of them, empaths process information as if it is their own. So an empath walks into a room and suddenly feels really sad. They're not going to be like, wow, something must have happened in this room. It feels really sad in here. They would go, why do I suddenly feel so sad? And so in my experience, the big challenge with being an empath is that often we're picking information up from outside of ourselves, but interpreting it as if it's our own and thinking there's something wrong with us. So this kind of leads into what is gaslighting. So I'm imagining you've talked about gaslighting before. The term originated from a movie that I believe was in the 1930s, where basically it was the story about a husband who had nefarious purposes and actually stood to gain from basically putting his wife into an asylum, driving her crazy. I believe it was financial benefit. And so what he did was he started to, every time she'd go into a room, and the term gaslight literally comes from this, he would turn the lights down. And at that point in time, the lights were fueled with gas. So they were called gas lights. And he would turn the dials down so the room would be dimmer than usual. And when she would make an observation about the room being dimmer than usual, he would basically say, "What are you even talking about? That's all in your head. You're just being crazy. There's nothing going on here." And so the concept or the term gaslighting has become a very popular term to define when somebody is telling us that our experience is illegitimate, that our experience is wrong, that it is all in our head, that we are making this up, and that basically, like, we're overreacting, we're taking it too personally, we're being too sensitive, and that this is not reality, that their reality is real and legitimate, and ours is not, and essentially, we're crazy. So that's my definition.
I love that. That is amazing. I've never heard anybody put it quite succinctly as that. And it makes sense, because at the end there, where you were saying you're being too sensitive, you're making this up, it's not really happening like that. And these were the terminology that was being not thrown at me, but basically vomited at me
all the time.
Yeah, and you start to go, holy shit, is this really happening? Am I going crazy?
Maybe I'm making too big a deal out of it. Maybe I am overreacting. Maybe I am being too sensitive. What is even happening here? And, you know, a really classic example of gaslighting that so many people experience, and I think especially empaths in relationships with narcissists and abusive people, how many times do people get told, I'm sorry you feel that way about that? Or I'm sorry you're feeling angry. I'm sorry that's so hard for you. Instead of, I'm really sorry that I said something that hurt your feelings. I'm really sorry that my behavior is affecting you. It's like, I'm sorry that you feel that way about my behavior. It's very subtle, but it's a really different thing, because what it's doing is it's turning the ownership onto the victim and onto the person who's feeling something, as opposed to the perpetrator who is basically behaving like a jerk.
Yes, absolutely. And it is that subtle wording that they're using that keeps on throwing it back at you constantly yeah. at you. Oh, yeah. That's silly. Why would you even think that? And you go, oh, I don't know. Why would I think that? And you question everything you're thinking, feeling, saying, doing. Your whole world starts to just go, what the hell?
Yeah.
Gone off on a good
well, and it sort of, it gives, it really gives, I was just thinking with you being in Australia, it's like it gives the Wizard of Oz a whole new meaning, you know, because it's like, you know, it's that whole thing of pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. See the thing I'm projecting here. See the image that I'm trying to put out into the world and have you believe what I am. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, because we all know that the man behind the curtain is not the great and powerful Oz. He's some con man from Kansas who, you know, is riding around from circuit to circuit trying to get his way, but that is not the great and powerful Oz. And yet what so often the narcissist and anytime we have somebody who's sort of abusive and gaslighting, they don't want us to see the truth of their own low self-esteem, of their own despair, of their own challenges, of their own doubts. And so a lot of times we are really dealing with that pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So, well, I've gone off on that lovely tangent because I needed to get that clear understanding of gaslighting. Yes.
It's so, well, and I agree with you. So like the thing is, so often, so many problems could be avoided if we just clarified our definitions together before we got into the conversation. So I love that we started with definitions.
Yes, I do try to do that. But we just can't assume that everybody knows what we're talking about. When we're in these circles and we're in those spiritual circles, we can talk about all those things and not have a problem. But when somebody doesn't understand what gaslighting is or what an empath is, then there's a lot of difference in it. But I want to go back to empaths, because this is, I know gaslighting is really important, and I do want to join that up again as we go through it. But I want to get a little bit more understanding of an empath. I want to get the real, I guess, some concrete, not evidence, but some concrete examples.
Examples, yes.
Of empath and how we take it on board.
So in my experience, being an empath can show up in different ways. And being an empath for some people, and I find that it is very much on a spectrum. And so, as I was mentioning before, being an empath means that you're picking up the thoughts, the feelings, the energy, and the sensations from the world around you. The challenge with this is because empaths process this information as if it is their own. Sometimes it's on a physical level where they're dealing with a lot of health issues. Maybe they're just feeling stuff like digestive distress all the time. I can't count the number of empathic children I have known over the years who manifest their empathic distress as stomach issues, as digestive distress. But there's, you know, some empaths are going to express things on a behavioral level where they might be really anxious and just running around all the time, feeling the need to clean all the time, maybe, or just completely exhausted and incapable of doing much of anything other than like watching Netflix. Some empaths process everything intensely emotionally, like it's coming through their body. It is, or through their emotional state. And then some empaths are more mental, where they're just thinking all the time. But the thing that makes somebody like an empath as opposed to an intuitive or psychic is that because we process things through our own filters, we are often experiencing this, what I call empathic overwhelm, and not knowing that it's coming from outside of ourselves. So one of the things that I've found to be fairly consistent about empaths is that many of us don't even know that that's what we are when we first start experiencing our sensitivity. And what happens is we will start to feel out of sorts, emotionally unstable, sometimes physically wonky, fearful, anxious, sad, angry, for no apparent reason. We can look at our entire life and we can kind of like run through the laundry list of everything that's going on, and there's nothing that correlates with why we feel so intensely. And often what happens is that a day, two, three, couple weeks, maybe even a couple months later, suddenly something will occur that really resonates with or reflects the exact emotions we were feeling. And we're like, oh, that's what I was picking up on. So in my experience, that's one of the things that almost every single person I know who has struggled with being an empath has dealt with, is the unexplainable empathic overwhelm and emotional and mental distress that has no correlation with their own reality.
Okay, now let me repeat what you've said in my terminology to see if that makes, if I'm right. Mm-hmm. So an empath is taking on the feelings, emotions, the energy around the environment or wherever they are.
Yes.
They're taking it on board and they're feeling it's theirs. They're not understanding that it's not necessarily theirs.
Exactly. So if somebody is feeling an emotion, instead of being like, wow, I sense a lot of sadness, what happens is suddenly it's like, why do I suddenly feel so sad? Yep. If somebody is feeling really apathetic and sort of like a sense of hopelessness of like, what's the point? Then suddenly maybe we feel really apathetic. I actually, another empath coach that I know just posted something the other day saying about how being an empath can sometimes actually block your intuition, because she was working with a client who was going through a period where they were feeling really defeated and really like nothing's going to work, just nothing is going to work. And all of a sudden this coach was feeling that feeling and was like, just sort of feeling the sense of like nothing is going to work. And what they realized was that their empathic sensitivity had them imagining or processing the sense of futility that their client was feeling, but it was blocking their intuitive ability to support this person because they were kind of in that sort of rut. Fortunately, they have enough experience and enough knowledge about what it means to be an empath that they were able to kind of backpedal and go, wait a second, this is not mine, this is theirs, and how can I help them to move past this feeling? But very much so, the empaths will process emotions, thoughts, physical sensations as if we are feeling them ourselves.
Right. Okay. So, and one of the other things you were saying, that was the difference between the psychic, the intuitive, and the empath. Can you just briefly go over that so people have an understanding of that too?
Absolutely. Okay, so in my experience, bottom line, psychic, empath, intuitive, or medium are all picking up paranormal, as in larger than or, you know, greater than normal, something outside of the normal world. They're picking up the unseen, unspoken, energetic signature, vibration, however you want to think about it, that is coming from around. And they are processing that information, you know, it's like they receive it. In my experience, the main difference between empaths and those three other things is that, as I said, empaths often mistake what they're picking up and because they as if it's their own, because they process the information through their emotional, sensory, and even mental channels. But it's like, I think the thought that other person is having. I feel the feeling that other person is feeling. I have the memory that the other person is having, but I don't necessarily, but it can be shifted just enough that I really do think it's mine. Whereas a psychic with all of their clairs is going to receive information and know, oh, all of a sudden I'm having this vision, clairvoyance, but it's not mine. I know I'm picking something up from outside of me.
Yes.
Now, in my experience, the distinction between intuition and psychic ability is that I personally experience intuition as being very much an embodied sense that tends to live in my heart and my gut, that tends to live sort of like, it tends to sort of be more of a full-bodied experience. And it is more of a deep knowing that exists within me where I just know things that I should not know. But I understand that I know things about the world around me, not necessarily just about myself or that I'm processing it through me. Whereas in my experience, psychic ability, at least for me, tends to be far more in the mind and in this sort of quality of I'm receiving this sort of like through the crown chakra, through the third eye, and I'm receiving this information that is coming in, and it's often much more fully formed. It's not as embodied as either being an empath is or having intuition. And then the best explanation I've ever heard that distinguishes being a medium from being a psychic is that psychics are picking up information about the living world and are picking up information about sort of the scene, you know, like what exists in our reality. Whereas mediums are picking up information from the deceased, you know, from the other side. And that can be picking up information from people who've crossed over, but also picking up information that is coming in through from other dimensions. And so, you know, some people would say there's a distinction between what is a channel and what is a medium. I'm not necessarily as inclined to separate those two as to say that a medium is picking up information from the spiritual realms and often and able to communicate with very much the unseen.
Yeah. And it's all just, they're all there. They're all from the spirit side, as in not from the physical side, but yes, we're getting them at different levels in different ways. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. So I need to know a little bit more about the empath. And I had a question and I can't remember what it was. Oh, whoops, I lost it.
I always do that. I totally get it. I'm glad it's you and not me.
Yeah, nice, isn't it? So there's an example I wanna put forward. And I would like to know where that one sits, right? If I was, say, I'm at work and I'm picking up that my boss isn't happy with something that I've done, or my boss isn't happy with I'm just picking up that feeling that they're not happy with me. What is that? What does that look like? What would you do with that? Because I would take normally, okay, I'll just explain to you. Normally I would take that personally and I would get upset because he's not happy with me. What can I do to change it? How can I, you know, what do I have to do to my life to make his life happier? Which I know is wrong.
So this is a huge question. This is a really big question because there are a lot of different factors to this. And so one of the things that I think is really important about our approach to this is recognizing whether we are reacting or responding, and whether we are being curious or we are judging. Because we live in a culture that is very quick to react and judge, as opposed to respond and be curious. And the thing is, there could be any number of reasons why you are sensing that your boss has got his panties in a wad. You know, he could have awoken on the wrong side of the bed. He could have had a fight with his wife or his husband or her wife or her husband, or, you know, however you want to define it. But there could have been something that happened before. They could have been stuck in traffic and just felt really cranky. They could be under a great deal of pressure about something. And it just so happens that you happened to give them the report that you were supposed to be working on at the exact moment that they had gotten some kind of thing from their higher up asking for something, and they're all grumbling and pissy. There are so many reasons why you could be picking up on this. Now, the thing is that for many of us who are highly sensitive and empathic, we grew up in families where we needed to be very aware of whether we were pleasing the people who had power or not. And so a lot of times we're sort of hyper-vigilant and very sensitive to what other people are thinking and whether they are happy. one of the things that's kind of interesting about empaths is that because of our sensitivity to picking up other people's feelings, and especially when we have not done our own work with our own feelings, we feel better when other people feel better, and we feel worse when other people feel lousy. So we're going to have a part of us that when we're sensing our boss is in a cranky mood, there's going to be a part of us that's like, what can I do? What can I do? How can I fix this? What I would actually suggest is, you know, first off, take a beat, take a pause, just sort of like, instead of jumping to the conclusion that I am the result of this, or that it is my behavior that is causing my boss to be angry, what I find is really important is to just like take a breather. Maybe it literally means like go outside, look up the sky, put your feet on the ground, just like just stop and pause. And then, you know, just having that moment of breathing, again, still watch, just notice, observe. And then something that I discovered, not with a boss, but with my husband quite a number of years ago, was that a really effective way to ask a question, because when I was younger, I would be very likely to say, are you angry with me? Is something wrong? What's going on? And of course, you know, if somebody's not able to answer that question, or somebody's, you know, or somebody's gaslighting, their answer is no, nothing's wrong. It's all in your head. But what I discovered was really helpful was to say, I'm imagining that there is, or I'm, you know, like I'm imagining that you are angry with me. Is that true? And the thing is, often what I would find is that by asking a question in that way, I'm imagining that you may be feeling angry with me right now, or I'm feeling afraid, or I'm feeling concerned that I did something that made you upset. Is that true? That gives them the opportunity to clarify what's actually going on. Now, maybe they're going to say, nope, nothing to see here. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Move along, folks. Like, I, you know, I'm good. And then what I would say is, if they say that, take it at face value. If they are being passive aggressive and they are not willing to own their feelings about something, or say, well, actually, yeah, you handed in a subpar report, and I was really frustrated because this is going to require like a lot of reworking or something like that. If they're not willing to own that, if they're not willing to share that piece, it is not my circus and not my monkey if they're not able to articulate what's going on. But what I will say is that in my experience and in my travels, the answers that come back are usually either, oh, I had no idea that my mood was spilling out on you. This has nothing to do with you. I just got a phone call from somebody. I just got a text from somebody. I just got a request about something that's got me all, I'm all distracted. I'm all worried. I'm all concerned. So they tell you the context and they put it in context. Or in some cases, they might just really be like, you know, yeah, you're right. I am feeling something right now. Thank you for asking. This is what is going on. But I would say that for me, probably about 95% of the time that I ask a question like that, I get clarification and a reality check that allows me to put it in perspective. And on the rare circumstances where it actually is me, it then gives me an opportunity to make amends and to sort of correct the situation. So how was that for an answer?
Oh, that was brilliant. I loved it because, I mean, I gave you an example that people could be experiencing in any type, way, shape or form. And you've given us such a good understanding of it. And I'm imagining that you are is perfect.
Yeah.
It's a great way to come back with some, you know, with, and it doesn't sound so threatening, like you said.
Well, and it's owning your stuff. You know, I'm saying, I'm imagining you're angry right now. I'm sensing, you know, and it's not even I'm sensing you're angry or you seem angry. It's saying, I'm imagining you're angry right now, which really allows that other person to, if they really can't own it, you know, it in a way, I think it really gives them, it allows them to not own it if they are not in a place to own it. But I also find that ironically, when you don't make somebody own it, they're much more likely to and willing to own it than during those times where somebody's sort of like, you seem angry, or why are you so angry? Of course you're going to get, if you ask that question, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get the response is going to be, I'm not angry. You're angry. What's your problem? Like you're going to get pushback. Whereas I'm imagining that this is going on, is that true, really allows us to open up the conversation. Now I will throw in a caveat, and that is, if you are dealing with a mentally ill, like borderline narcissist, like, or, you know, somebody with a narcissistic personality disorder who really is toxic and who really is just cruel and invested in invalidating you, using that approach may or may not yield great results, just because they look for ammunition in anything. It does not matter how you handle the situation, and it doesn't matter what you say. Certain kinds of people are abusers who are just invested in using whatever is thrown at them as fodder for attack. And so if you are in a relationship with somebody who is just vicious, I would say that you could experiment with this, but if you find that they just keep on pummeling you like a punching bag, emotionally, psychically, you know, intellectually, then there gets to be the point where, for me, I make the choice to not try to have an emotionally intelligent or intimate relationship with a person who is incapable of doing that. And so there is a certain level of discernment that I think we need to have as to whether or not somebody has the emotional intelligence to recognize what's actually going on under the hood for them, and to be able to claim and own their feelings as well.
I love that. So before I go any further, because I'm going to ask you a question about narcissists, because again, that's another terminology we're using. And if people are not familiar with it, it's nice to get it, hear it verbally. But before we go any further, if you want to connect with Jennifer, her website is going along the ticker tape, but it is empathicmastery.com. So empathicmastery.com is where you'll be able to connect with Jennifer, or Jen, for us,
Jen.
People
yeah.
that know her really well, and for her nieces, nephews, it's Jenny.
Actually, sadly, I have no nieces. I only have nephews. Yeah, I wanted a niece so badly, but I have goddess daughters instead. But anyway.
All right. So, okay, I want to get a little bit more of an understanding, because we've got this caveat in when it comes to dealing with narcissists. What is a narcissist in your view?
Okay, in my view. So I think, you know, most people would probably agree that a narcissist is kind of like, it's all about them all day, every day. It's like, it's the me show 24/7. And the thing about narcissists is that often a narcissist, at the very core of them, has this deep emotional wound that causes them to seek validation and external acknowledgement and attention constantly. They don't feel good about themselves unless they are getting other people's approval, and they're getting all the, they're basically sucking all the oxygen out of the room. And the thing is that narcissists feed on attention. They feed on positive attention, but they also feed on negative attention. And a lot of times, narcissists, I believe, narcissism very frequently arises out of neglect and abuse in childhood. And there's this thing, human beings are wired for connection. We are wired to need connection. And the irony of humans is that it is actually causes more harm to a human being to be what is called disconfirmed than it is to get negative attention. That being neglected and abandoned is more lethal for us as human beings, and for any mammal, for any species, than to actually get to be in the presence of somebody else and be getting negative attention. And so the thing is that often little children, because they need attention, if they are being neglected, if they're being ignored, they will discover that they will get attention by acting out. And so a lot of times what is happening when you have a narcissist is that there gets to be a point where the need for attention gets to be greater than whatever you can possibly give them. Because the thing about narcissists is that they are a bottomless pit of need for attention. The other thing about narcissists is that they often lack the capacity to take responsibility for anything themselves. They often lack the ability to have self-reflection or clarity about what's going on and what's making them tick and why they behave the way they do. And pretty classically, narcissists blame everything other than themselves. If something goes wrong, it's the world's fault. It's that person's fault. It's this. It's the bad luck. It's this happened, that happened. Whereas if something goes right, it's always them that gets the credit for it. And so the challenge with a narcissist, because of that bottomless pit of need, is that often, and this is something we can talk about in, you know, after I finish this definition, is sort of what I see is kind of like the fatal attraction made in heaven. Like it's a match made in heaven that descends into hell between the empath and the narcissist. Because the thing is that when the empath first meets the narcissist, they are both like it just feels awesome because the narcissist is getting all that attention. But because it is such a bottomless pit, it is such a, nothing is ever going to meet all the needs of the narcissist because they want and want and want. The problem is that because of that lack of it, that lack of capacity to truly receive, it is inevitable that there will come a point where because of that sense of abandonment, rejection, and neglect that is the core wound underneath all of it, they will eventually start acting out. They will eventually start behaving in very inappropriate ways. They will start doing provocative things to get a rise out of you because that increases the level of intention that they are desperate for, because they are like a junkie for attention. They that they need that attention. And it's almost like any kind of a drug. You start with a certain amount of a drug and you build up a tolerance to it. And so with narcissists, they might start with a level of positive, loving attention from the empath, and it's wonderful. But over time, their tolerance for that love sort of like increases, and they need more and more and more. They need a lot more. And that inevitably kind of leads to all of the behaviors that we've been talking about.
Wow. Yes. I'm just taking all that in, Jen. It's like, yes, yes, tick, 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 tick. Yeah. And know exactly what you mean. So we've got this situation then with an empath, and you have gone through how we can help master that aspect. Now, your book, which I've got going on the ticker tape too, is Empathic Mastery. Yes. So you can pick that up at
any major book outlet, you know, and if you go to empathicmasterybook.com, there's links for all of the international markets. So, yep. You know, there's links to Amazon for all of the Amazon markets there, but you can pick it up pretty much anywhere. If you look for Empathic Mastery, I don't know if it's not necessarily being carried in live bookstores anymore, but you can get it online anywhere.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And now in that you've got 5 steps. Can we I don't want to go into it too deep because obviously they can buy the book, but just we've got a bit of time to be able to just pop over those 5 steps and that might be just what they need.
So basically what I discovered is that, and I'll just start by saying that when I first came into this whole world of psychic development, intuitive development, all of that, everybody was focused mostly on opening up the channel and learning how to receive more information. And what I've discovered is that for many of us who are empaths, we don't need to be more open. We need to learn how to navigate and process the information that is coming to us. But the other thing that I noticed was that a lot of times the solutions that were being given were focusing first and foremost on psychic self-defense and on putting up the filters and shields, sending love and light out there. What I discovered is that if you've already been absorbing energy, if you've already been taking on a whole bunch of stuff, putting a bubble of light up around you is not going to cut it. And no. So over a lot of time, what I found was that there's a sort of process that we have to go through. So the first step is recognize. And where at first I was just like, recognize is about what's mine, what's not mine. I actually have come to understand that recognize is even more nuanced than that. The first part of recognize is claiming your identity as an empath, saying, yes, this is what I am. This is why I'm this sensitive. This is what's going on. Then from that awareness, recognizing when we're feeling out of sorts, recognizing when there is no explainable reason why suddenly we're feeling so fearful or so sad or so angry. And, you know, like, why are we feeling so agitated, so anxious, so wired or kind of keyed up? Recognizing when we are off of our baseline. So recognizing what our baseline is and recognizing when we're off of it. From that, then it becomes recognizing what we are picking up on. And so I always like to ask the question when I realize that I'm out of sorts, I ask the question, is this mine? And I will say that 99% of the time, the answer is yes, and that there's some of it is coming from within me, some of it is coming from outside of me. And so then I ask the next question, which is, what's mine? What's not mine? And sometimes from that question, I'll start getting the deeper levels of recognize, which is, where is this coming from? Is this coming from an experience that's going on currently? Is this coming from picking up on my boss's pissy attitude today? Is this coming from my own childhood experience or a trigger that has gotten activated in me? Is this about some kind of ancestral family legacy or inherited distress that is coming forward? Or is this something from a past life? Is this karmic? So there are so many different ways that things can show up. And most of the time, it's not just one, it's multiple pieces. It's kind of the perfect storm that contributes to it. So then once we have recognized, like once we recognize we're picking something up, then we go to release. Because the thing is that if you don't drain the bathtub, all you're going to have is dirty bathwater. Like, we absolutely need to wring out the psychic sponge and drain out all of that distress that we've picked up. Because if we do not release the stuff that is no longer serving us, both our own personal triggers and fears and stuff that we're carrying around, but also the empathic overwhelm that we've absorbed and taken on, then it's sort of like we're just going to be kind of debilitated just trying to process that information. So release is the next step. Then after release is when protect comes in. And protect is about psychic and energetic and sort of astral hygiene, having a really good, robust filters and shields, a strong aura. But it's also about strategy. It's also about the ability to set boundaries. It's about the ability to recognize, what are you willing to do? What's your job? What's in your wheelhouse? And what isn't? So two of my favorite things with protect are reminding myself of the saying, not my circus, not my monkeys. And also, I live by this, your poor planning does not constitute my emergency. So like if somebody is writing to me at like 3 o'clock in the morning saying that they need something by 9 o'clock the next day, I'm just like, too bad, so sad. You could have reached out to me a month ago when you knew this was happening. I'm not going to help you because you didn't plan for this. And that has been really helpful. Just your poor planning does not constitute my emergency. The next step is connect, because the universe abhors a vacuum. And we can basically be absorbing all of the sort of distress and fear and worry that's coming from the world, or we can tune into the higher octave of divine wisdom, of loving support, as well as the universal frequency of love and light that is just completely guides this entire universe. When we make that connection, it is much harder to keep on absorbing all the negativity that does exist in the realm of sort of the realm of the human lived experience of the sort of the illusion that this is all there is, where fear really is epidemic. And then the final step is act, because words without works is dead. And in order to really sustain empathic mastery and empathic health and be a responsible empath in the world, we need to make choices that reinforce impeccability, ethics, and really knowing how to live with integrity. And that often means not going places that we don't belong, minding our own business. And one of the things that I will say about ACT is, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And so when we are baby empaths who are just picking up everything all the time, we may not be able to help that we know things we should not know, like that our boss is having an affair with one of the other people, one of the other employees, again, you know, behind the back of their spouse. Like, we may not be able to help that we know these things. But once we start working towards understanding the nature of our gifts and our abilities, there gets to be a point where we learn to be like, not my monkey, not my circus. I am not, you know, like, I might get a whiff that something is going on, but I do not need to lean into it and probe it and ping it and find out more. And so for me, ACT has a great deal to do with only working with and serving and being psychic and intuitive and sort of using my empathic abilities when I have consent and permission, and not using it when I don't. So that might have been a little longer than you expected, but that really goes into it thoroughly. Yeah. And the book is,
love it. I had to jump on
380 pages. So yeah. There's plenty more to see. Yeah.
Absolutely. I had to jump on because we are getting low on time. Yeah. But I love that. So that recognize, release, protect, connect, and act.
Yeah.
And to get all the details and get all the understanding, jump on the website, which is empathicmastery.com.
Yes.
And you will find the book, the link to the book and everything there.
Exactly.
That is perfect. Love it. But we are getting short on time. You have got a couple of really quick minutes if you want to, if there's anything else you want to say before we say goodbye.
I want to, you know, I mentioned to you that I was really thinking about this thing, and I've really been coming to understand and the correlation between intuition and being, you know, and why as empaths, especially, we doubt our intuition. We doubt the information that is coming in. We so often, and I will say that in my travels, out of the hundreds, if not thousands of empaths I've spoken to, I have met one person who was not told, you're making this up, you're too sensitive, you're overreacting, you're taking it too personally. The problem with this, and the fact that we live in a society that tends to think this woo stuff is still a little weird and kind of unquantifiable and unprovable, many of us, when we start getting this information, when we start developing our intuitive gifts, we'll doubt ourselves, we'll second guess ourselves, we'll go backwards on it. We'll be like, we get an answer immediately, and then we're like, oh, that couldn't possibly be true. Or we really censor ourselves because we are so used to being told that something isn't real. What I want to say is that in my experience, pretty much all the time, especially as children, we were picking up on something legitimate. We were picking up on things that were really happening. Unfortunately, we were also in a culture or in a family system where people could not own their emotions. The challenge with this, as we develop our intuitive abilities, is that a lot of times that's going to cause us to put the emergency brake on or to sort of like go back on our belief. And I will say that in my experience and what I've witnessed with many people, the first answer is almost always the right answer. The first flash, the thing that just comes through without you even thinking about it, that's right. Then when you second guess yourself, then when you try to bring logic in, then when you try to like be like, well, that couldn't be possibly be real, that's when we get ourselves into trouble. But I will say, I have seen so many people where I can see the answer coming to them, and then I can see them push it away. And part of that is because of the gaslighting that many of us experienced from a very, very early age. We have to work through the ways that that gaslighting and that invalidation and that, and sometimes like criticism and nastiness has affected our self-trust and our belief in ourselves. So that was the thing that I definitely wanted to be sure to say.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's usually the first, I shouldn't say usually, because it is. It's always the first
answer. Yeah.
As soon as we start to think about it, it's when we go, because I still do it. I still do it. You pick that up and go, oh, yeah, I'll do. And then, oh, yeah, but hang on, if I do that, rah, rah. And then it's like, no, stop thinking about it. Go back to where you were. Yeah.
I can't count the number of times a name drops in and I question myself and I don't say it. And then the person says it and I'm like, oh my God, I heard that name five minutes ago. Yeah. And it's just so frustrating to do that. Yeah. But what I would say is that, and this is where as an EFT master trainer, I've really spent a lot of time working with the idea of guessing. Sometimes the best thing you can do, like one of the best ways to access your intuition, is to just play a guessing game. What would it be if you guessed it? Like, just guess. Like, don't try to think about it at all. Just guess and give me an answer. And I find that because the guess will access our subconscious in a way that thinking very often, like thinking brings us to our ego, guessing brings us to our subconscious and our heart.
Yeah. We have to go, Jenny. Yeah. Otherwise, we are in all sorts of bother because I can't then spread it out as nice as I like. Thank you so much for being on the show. Don't go away because I want to chat with you in a minute. But thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Susan, or do you go by Susan or Susan Jane?
It's just Susan, yeah.
Susan, thank you so much for having me here. This conversation has been so rich. I can't believe how fast the time has gone by. And thank you for asking such great questions.
Oh, Matt, we need these great questions. We need to have those answers. I really appreciate it. But stay there. Don't go away. Gosh, jump on the website. It's empathicmastery.com. You're going to really love it. I really like how she explains it. It makes sense. And I guess because I've lived it too, it almost... When you're living in that gaslighting situation, when you're feeling those things, you're questioning yourself all the time. So it's really lovely when somebody on the outside turns around and goes, hey, you're not really going crazy. And I know we don't need to have that justification, but holy shit, it feels good when you get it, when you get that aha moment happening. So share, like, subscribe to the podcast. I'm talking way too much again like I normally do. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really look forward to seeing you next week. And I will say bye for now.